Today on Tristan Storytime, Raggedy Ann flies high with a kite in the sky. Then little Tom Thumb goes on some big adventures. Next, a family of mice come up with a plan to put a little bell around the cat's neck. But the question is, can it be done? And finally, in the game of baseball, no matter how bad things are, all you have to do is follow the advice of the great poet Edgar Albert Guest. Play the game. Those stories and more next. Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Tristan Storytime. I'm Tristan Gardner. I'm so glad you're able to join me once again for another great episode. And as always, feel free to use your imaginations, because this is what this podcast is all about, using your imaginations. So find a seat and get comfortable, because another episode of Tristan Storytime is about to begin. Do you wish that you could fly sometimes? I always wish that I could fly. But to be totally honest, I feel much safer on the ground. And I'm sure Marcella feels the same way about Raggedy Ann after her high-flying adventure in the sky, with a kite. And it's all in this classic story, Raggedy Ann and the Kite. Raggedy Ann watched with interest the preparations. A number of sticks were being fastened together with strings and covered with light cloth. Raggedy Ann heard some of the boys talk of the kite, so Raggedy Ann knew this must be a kite. When a tail had been fastened to the kite and a large ball of heavy twine tied to the front, one of the boys held the kite up in the air and another boy walked off, unwinding the ball of twine. There was a nice breeze blowing, so the boy with the twine called, "Let her go!" and started running. Marcella held Raggedy up so she could watch the kite sail through the air. How nicely it climbed! But suddenly, the kite acted strangely, and as all the children shouted advice to the boy with the ball of twine, the kite began darting this way and that, and finally making four or five loop-the-loops, it crashed to the ground. "It needs more tail on it," one boy shouted. Then the children asked each other where they might get more rags to fasten to the tail of the kite.
"Let's tie Raggedy Ann to the tail," suggested Marcella. "I know she would enjoy a trip way up in the sky."
The boys all shouted with delight at this new suggestion, so Raggedy Ann was tied to the tail of the kite. This time the kite rose straight in the air and remained steady. The boy with the ball of twine unwound it until the kite and Raggedy Ann were way, way up and far away. How Raggedy Ann enjoyed being up there! She could see for miles and miles, and how tiny the children looked. Suddenly, a great puff of wind came and carried Raggedy Ann streaming way out behind the kite. She could hear the wind singing on the twine as the strain increased. Suddenly, Raggedy Ann felt something rip. It was the rag to which she was tied. As each puff of wind caught her, the rip widened. When Marcella watched Raggedy Ann rise high above the field, she wondered how much Raggedy Ann enjoyed it and wished that she too might have gone along. But after the kite had been up in the air for 5 or 10 minutes, Marcella grew restless. Kites were rather tiresome. There was more fun in tea parties out under the apple tree.
"Will you please pull down the kite now?"
she asked the boy with the twine.
"I want Raggedy Ann."
"Let her ride up there," the boy replied. "We'll bring her home when we pull down the kite. We're going to get another ball of twine and let her go higher."
Marcella did not like to leave Raggedy Ann with the boys, so she sat down upon the ground to wait until they pulled down the kite. But while Marcella watched Raggedy Ann, a dot in the sky, she could not see the wind ripping through the rag to which Raggedy was tied. Suddenly, the rag parted, and Raggedy Ann went sailing away as the wind caught in her skirts. Marcella jumped from the ground, too surprised to say anything. The kite, released from the weight of Raggedy Ann, began darting and swooping to the ground.
"We'll get her for you,"
some of the boys said when they saw Marcella's troubled face, and they started running in the direction Raggedy Ann had fallen. Marcella and the other girls ran with them. They ran and they ran and they ran, and at last they found the kite upon the ground with one of the sticks broken. But they could not find Raggedy Ann anywhere.
"She must have fallen almost in your yard,"
a boy said to Marcella,
"for the kite was directly over here when the doll fell."
Marcella was heartbroken. She went in the house and lay on the bed. Mama went out with the children and tried to find Raggedy Ann, but Raggedy Ann was nowhere to be seen. When Daddy came home in the evening, he tried to find Raggedy too, but met with no success. Marcella had hardly eaten any dinner, nor could she be comforted by Mama or Daddy. The other dolls in the nursery lay forgotten and were not put to bed that night, for Marcella lay and sobbed and tossed about her bed. Finally, she said a little prayer for Raggedy Ann and went to sleep. And as she slept, Marcella dreamed that the fairies came and took Raggedy Ann with them to Fairyland for a visit, and then sent Raggedy Ann home to her. She awakened with a cry. Of course, Mama came to her bed right away and said that Daddy would offer a reward in the morning for the return of Raggedy.
"It was all my fault, Mama,"
Marcella said.
"I should not have offered the boys dear old Raggedy Ann to tie on the tail of the kite. But I just know the fairies will send her back."
Mama took her in her arms and soothed her with cheering words, although she felt indeed that Raggedy Ann was truly lost and would never be found again. Now, where do you suppose Raggedy Ann was all this time? When Raggedy Ann dropped from the kite, the wind caught in her skirts and carried her along until she fell in the fork of the large elm tree directly over Marcella's house. When Raggedy Ann fell with a thud, face up in the fork of the tree, two robins who had a nest nearby flew chattering away. Presently, the robins returned and quarreled at Raggedy Ann for laying so close to their nest, but Raggedy Ann only smiled at them and did not move. When the robins quieted down and quit their quarreling, one of them hopped up closer to Raggedy Ann in order to investigate. It was Mama Robin. She called to Daddy Robin and told him to come.
"See the nice yarn? We could use it to line the nest with," she said.
So the robins hopped closer to Raggedy Ann and asked if they might have some of her yarn hair to line their nest. Raggedy Ann smiled at them. So the two robins pulled and tugged at Raggedy Ann's yarn hair until they had enough to line their nest nice and soft. Evening came, and the robins sang their goodnight songs, and Raggedy Ann watched the stars come out, twinkle all night, and disappear in the morning light. In the morning, the robins again pulled yarn from Raggedy Ann's head and loosened her so she could peep over the side of the limb. And when the sun came up, Raggedy Ann saw she was in the trees in her own yard. Now, before she could eat any breakfast, Marcella started out to find Raggedy Ann. And it was Marcella herself who found her. And this is how she did it. Mama Robin had seen Marcella with Raggedy Ann out in the yard many times, so she began calling,
"Cheery, cheery!"
And Daddy Robin started calling,
"Cheery, cheery! Cheer up, cheer up! Cheerily, cheerily, cheerily!"
And Marcella, looking up into the tree above the house to see the robins, discovered Raggedy Ann peeping over the limb at her. Oh, how her heart beat with happiness!
"Here's Raggedy Ann!"
she shouted. And Mama and Daddy came out and saw Raggedy smiling at them. And Daddy got the clothes prop and climbed out of the attic window and poked Raggedy Ann out of the tree, and she fell right into Marcella's arms, where she was hugged in a tight embrace.
"You'll never go up on a kite again, Raggedy Ann,"
said Marcella,
"for I felt so lost without you. I will never let you leave me again."
So Raggedy Ann went into the house and had breakfast with her little mistress, and Mama and Daddy smiled at each other when they peeped through the door into the breakfast room, for Raggedy Ann's smile was wide and very yellow. Marcella, her heart full of happiness, was feeding Raggedy Ann part of her egg. Now that's what I call a high-flying adventure. Stay right where you are. Tristan Storytime will continue in a moment. Have you ever known someone that's odd? Or maybe someone who has a disability of some kind? Or maybe somebody who's so small you can barely see them at eye level? Well, there are some people like that, but none are as small as my good friend Tom Thumb. Let me tell you about it. In the days of good King Arthur, there lived a countryman and his wife, who, though they had plenty to eat and to drink, and a very comfortable cottage to live in, were not at all happy. They had no children, and they both wished very much for a baby. The wife was often in tears when her husband was out at work, and she was all alone, because she had not an infant to take care of and nurse. One day, as she sat weeping by herself, more than usually sad, she said aloud,
"If I only had a dear little baby, I should not care what it was like. I should be thankful for one if it were no bigger than my husband's thumb."
Now it happened that the queen of the fairies was passing by, though the poor woman could not see her, and as she knew the farmer's wife was kind to the poor and likely to be a good mother, she thought she would grant her wish. So about an hour or two afterwards, the woman was much surprised to see standing by the table a very beautiful lady, dressed splendidly with a glittering star on her forehead and a wand in her right hand, with a gem of great brilliancy at the top of it. But what delighted the woman most of all was a tiny cradle made of a walnut shell lined with velvet, in which lay the prettiest baby ever seen. But it was only just as large as a man's thumb.
"See," said the fairy, "your wish is granted. Here is a baby for you. Take care of it. It is your own."
The woman did not know how to thank the fairy enough. She was so delighted, and the queen went away quite pleased at having given so much happiness. Before the fairy went away, however, she gave the woman a little shirt of spider's web and a doublet of thistle down for the baby. When the farmer came home, he was very much pleased. He invited all his friends to the christening, and the child was named Tom, after him, and Thumb, because he was no bigger than one. Thus he was named Tom Thumb. The baby was very well and merry, and grew, of course, but still, it was very small. However, at last, Tom thought himself quite a great boy and begged his mother to make him a little suit of clothes, and she made him one, but with a great deal of trouble. They were so small. Tom was very often in mischief. He was so small that his mother used to put him on the table to play, and once she found him in the salt box. One day, she was making a plum pudding, and Tom stood by the side of the basin and peeped over the edge, but he could not see into it very well, and while his mother was gone for some more flour, he drew himself up on the edge of the basin. Alas, he fell in and disappeared in the wet pudding, which for poor Tom was a huge morass. Tom would have cried out, but the pudding stuck his lips together, and his mother, not missing him, stirred him up in the mixture and put it and him into the pot. Tom no sooner felt the hot water than he danced about like mad. The woman was nearly frightened out of her wits to see the pudding come out of the pot and jump about, and she was glad to give it to a tinker who was passing that way. The tinker took the pudding and put it into a cloth to carry it home to his family, who seldom taste such a good dish. But by and by, as he was climbing over a stile, he happened to squeeze it, and Tom, who had made quite an arch over his own head in the dry pudding by this time, cried out from the middle of it,
"Hello, Pickens!"
which so terrified the tinker that he let the pudding drop in the field and scampered off as fast as he could. The pudding fell to pieces in the fall, and Tom, creeping out, went home to his mother, whom he found in great trouble because she could not find him. After this accident, Tom's mother never let him stay near her while she was cooking. but she was obliged to take him with her when she went out milking, for she dared not trust the little man in the house alone. A few days after his escape from the pudding, Tom went with his mother into the fields to milk the cows. And for fear he should be blown away by the wind, she tied him to a thistle with a small piece of thread. Very soon after, a cow ate up the thistle and swallowed Tom Thumb. His mother was in sad grief again, but Tom scratched and kicked in the cow's throat till she was glad to throw him out of her mouth again, and he was not at all hurt. But his mother became very anxious about her small son, who now gave her a great deal of trouble. Sometimes he fell into the milk pail and was nearly drowned in the milk. Once he was nearly killed by an angry chicken. And another time had a narrow escape from a cat. One day, Tom went plowing with his father, who gave him a whip made of a barley straw to drive the oxen with. But an eagle flying by caught him up in his beak and carried him to the top of a great giant's castle and dropped him on the leads. The giant was walking on the battlements and thought at first that it was a foreign bird which lay at his feet, but soon, seeing that it was a small man, he picked Tom up with his finger and thumb and put the poor little creature into his great mouth. But the fairy dwarf scratched the roof of the giant's mouth and bit his great tongue and held on by his teeth till the ogre, in a passion, took him out again and threw him over into the sea, which ran beneath the castle walls. Here a very large fish swallowed him up directly. Tom did not at all like swimming about in the fish, but by and by he felt it drawn upwards and guessed at once that it was caught. And so it was, and being a very large fish, the fisherman thought it would make a great present for his beloved King Arthur. So he took it to the palace and begged the king to accept it. King Arthur was pleased with the poor man's affection, and ordered the fish to be carried to the kitchen and cooked for his own dinner. The fisherman took it to the cook, who admired it very much, but said it was very heavy. Then he laid it on a table and began to cut it open. You may imagine how he jumped with fear and wondered when Tom Thumb slipped out of the fish. The cook's cries brought the other servants, and soon everybody near ran to behold the wonder, the tiny man who came out of the fish. Tom begged for some water to wash himself, and when he was clean, the courtiers thought him so pretty and such a marvel that they ran to tell the king about him. Arthur was very much surprised, but he desired them to send the little man up after dinner to see him, and the court tailor made haste at once to get ready a court suit for Tom, which did not take him long to make. There were so few stitches on it. As soon as the king's great punch bowl was set on the royal table, Tom Thumb was carried to see the monarch, who was delighted with the little man. Tom walked on the king's hand and danced on the queen's. He became a great favorite with Arthur, who made him a knight. Such is the wonderful history of Tom Thumb, who did much good when he grew older, and thus proved that however small people are, they may be of use in the world. He was good and kind to his parents and to everybody, and the old ballad says, "Such were his deeds and noble acts, in Arthur's court there shone, as like in all the world beside, was hardly seen or known." Stay tuned for more stories, folks, as Tristan's Storytime continues. Have you ever felt that you wanted to get a task done, but felt daunted to do so? That's where the adage, easier said than done, comes in. And it's all in this classic fable called Belling the Cat by Aesop. The mice once called a meeting to decide on a plan to free themselves of their enemy, the cat. At least they wished to find some way of knowing when she was coming, so they might have time to run away. Indeed, something had to be done, for they lived in such constant fear of her claws that they hardly dared to stir from their dens by night or day. Many plans were discussed, but none of them was thought good enough. At last, a very young mouse got up and said,
"I have a plan that seems very simple, but I know it will be successful. All we have to do is to hang a bell around the cat's neck. When we hear the bell ringing, we will know immediately that our enemy is coming."
All the mice were much surprised that they had not thought of such a plan before. But in the midst of the rejoicing over their good fortune, an old mouse arose and said,
"I will say that the plan of the young mouse is very good, but let me ask one question. Who will bell the cat?"
Well, here's the moral of this fable. It is one thing to say that something should be done, but quite a different matter to do it. Or to put it simply, it's easier said than done. And that's why I say, easier said than done. Today we're singing one of my favorite nursery rhymes. And this one is traditionally sung in a round. You know what a round is? It's where one person starts the song while the second person starts the same song a bit later. This song was originally composed in France as Frère Jacques. The English translation, of course, is Are You Sleeping, Brother John? And that's what we're going to sing today. So s'il vous plaît. That's the French word for please. So wake up to the sound of morning bells as we sing along to Are You Sleeping, Brother John?
Are you sleeping? Are you sleeping, Brother John? Brother John, morning bells are ringing. Morning bells are ringing. Ding, dang, dong. Ding, dang, dong.
We will return with more Tristan Storytime in just a moment. You may recall sometime last year when I read Casey at the Bat. Yes, this poem does relate to baseball, but this doesn't relate to that particular poem. Here's the poem that I like to call Play the Game by Edgar Albert Guest. When the umpire calls you out, it's no use to stamp and shout. Wildly kicking dust about, play the game. And though his decision may end your chances for the day, rallies often end that way, play the game. When the umpire shouts,
Strike two!
And the ball seems wide to you, there is just one thing to do, play the game. Keep your temper at the plate, grit your teeth and calmly wait, for the next one may be straight. Play the game. When you think the umpire's wrong, tell him so, but jog along. Nothing's gained by language strong. Play the game. For his will must be obeyed, wheresoever baseball's played, Take his verdict as it's made. Play the game. Son of mine, beyond a doubt, fate shall often call you out. But keep on with courage stout. Play the game. In the battlefield of men, there'll come trying moments when you shall lose the verdict, then play the game. There's an umpire who shall say, you have missed your greatest play, and shall dash your hopes away. Play the game. You must bow unto his will, though your chance it seems to kill, and you think he erred, but still, play the game. For the great umpire above sees what we see nothing of. By his wisdom and his love, play the game. Keep your faith in him, although his grim verdicts hurt you so. At his will we come and go. Play the game. I think you know the moral of this poem, folks, and it's simply this. It's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. Boy, those were some great stories that we read today, weren't they? But we've just come to the end of another great show. Did you enjoy it? I know I did. Leave a comment on the Tristan Storytime Facebook page and Twitter feed. And don't forget to follow Tristan Storytime on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Oh, and hey, if you missed a great story from the past, you're in luck, because you get to see great videos of some of the stories I read in the past every Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. on social media. Music and sound effects are included. And if you want to get in touch with me, that's also very easy. Just send an email to TristanStorytime@gmail.com and I'll be in touch with you lickety-split. Well, it's time for me to go, but I'll be back again to read some more great stories to you. Until next time, I'm Tristan Gardner. Thank you for listening, and God bless, my friends. And remember, keep using your imaginations. Today's stories and nursery rhymes are Raggedy Ann and the Kite, taken from the book Raggedy Ann Stories, written and illustrated by Johnny Gruhl, published in 1918 by the P.F. Volland Company. Tom Thumb, taken from the book The National Nursery Book, published by Frederick Warren & Company. Belling the Cat, taken from the book The Aesop for Children by Aesop. Pictures by Myla Winter. Published in 1919 by Rand McNally and Company. Are You Sleeping, Brother John? Originally known as Frère Jacques. Originally published in 1780. Music arrangement by the Green Orbs. Play the Game. Taken from the book All That Matters. By Edgar Albert Guest. Published in 1922 by the Riley and Lee Company.